I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American Empire, National Security State operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, in light of a recently released government report, we're going to be talking about the subject of UFOs, or as some know them today, UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. More specifically, we're going to be talking about the UFO subculture and the exploitation that happens within it, as well as some of the strange figures within the UFO community, including Luis Elizondo, who was making headlines, including an appearance on 60 Minutes just prior to the release of the government UFO report. Joining us to unpack all of that and more is Jack Brewer of the UFO Trail blog. Within the UFO subculture, Jack is a bit of a controversial figure because he is willing to take the true believers to task and question incredulity. Additionally, he's also proven willing to call out rather sordid behaviors of figures within the UFO subculture, including forms of sexual exploitation and abuse. As discussed in his book, The Grays Have Been Framed: Exploitation in the UFO Community. Whether or not you believe in UFOs or you're a hardened skeptic, I think you'll find this conversation to be a fascinating one. Fair warning though, we do talk about the aforementioned sexual exploitation element that Jack has spoken out against within the UFO subculture. So keep that in mind. That portion of the conversation may be a bit disturbing. With all that being said, let's get right to the conversation with the UFO Trail blog's Jack Brewer. Welcome to Parallax Views. Jack Brewer of the UFO Trail blog. How are you doing tonight, Jack?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I initially wanted to have you on because of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence Preliminary Assessment Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Report, which was just released last week. But I wanted to first allow you to tell my listeners a little bit about how you got involved in the subject of UFOs.
Well, thank you. I've had a lifelong interest. I'm in my mid-50s now, and I've always been interested in spooky stories and UFOs and things like that. And in the early 1990s, I started attending conferences more actively and going to hear the speakers and getting really interested in the UFO scene at that point in time and some of the extraordinary claims that were going around. I got away from it for a while. I was raising a family and working on a career, and as my children reached adulthood and I felt like I had more time again, after the turn of the century, I got back into it again. And I was even more proactively asking people questions, and I was genuinely interested. And at that point, it caused my interest, and it actually caused me to become much more skeptical about it. A lot of times, people that I talked to would avert from the relevant questions, and they had low standards of evidence. And I think the whole UFO topic starts and ends with standards of evidence. And the alleged alien abduction phenomenon was really a thing at that point, the 1990s and early 2000s. And I had an interest in that and talked to people about it. And that's pretty much what led to my book, The Grays Have Been Framed. And I shared the cases I came across and the people I talked to in that. And while there may be some unusual phenomena at the center of UFO reports, it became really clear to me that there's a lot of people that exploit the topic for a lot of different reasons. And perhaps sometimes they have mutual interests, but everybody from the intelligence community to garden variety charlatans kind of put a spin on it. And it's pretty much been that way, in my opinion, since the dawn of the modern UFO phenomena in the mid-1940s, 1950s. But that's pretty much how I got interested in it and how I came to have a more critical view than when I got here. I think, like most people, I thought, wow, this is really fascinating. And people can plead a really good case in a paper book or during a 90-minute presentation at a UFO conference. But then when you start fact-checking and holding them accountable for how they arrived at some of these assertions, their stories can get a lot more difficult to accept.
So there's a lot to unpack there. What I've noticed in the past few years, especially since, I guess, the To the Stars Academy and Tom DeLonge really started trying to put the topic more into the mainstream and really helped get it a lot of mainstream press, this issue of UFOs. And especially in the past month, I've seen a lot of mainstream journalists and media outlets covering UFOs because of this report that just came out. And I feel like people aren't always asking the tough questions. So you said that you would ask questions and people would try to divert. Can you give any specific examples? I'm not even asking you to like name or out specific people, but like anything that you would ask that – you know, people would try to divert away from, because I feel like people have forgotten that you need to do that sometimes, ask those tough questions.
Yeah, I mean, I could fill our show with that circumstances. I've had that happen. Off the top of my head, Dr. David Jacobs, he made a lot of serious claims about things he was doing with alleged alien abductees, and I had the opportunity to interview him in person, and that literally led to him just asking me to turn my recorder off at one point with the line of questioning about how do you arrive at these assertions that you make? Is there, you know, anything other than just, you know, weaving them out of whole cloth? And just a lot of circumstances like that. Like I had a email interaction with Barbara Lamb, another hypnosis advocate and proponent of alien abduction. And she claimed to know literal extraterrestrial hybrids, ET human hybrids. And I asked her by email if any third parties, you know, medical professionals had done any work on this. And that exchange ended in her telling me that she was busy and didn't have time to discuss it right then. And as one of my friends and associates says, I guess she just didn't want her Nobel at that point in time. And with To the Stars Academy, I'd very much agree with you that the media has been very lax in its questions or lack thereof, and has pretty much accepted claims without a whole lot of critical analysis. And in my opinion, what we've seen is a very effectively run media strategy from Chris Mellon, Christopher Mellon. And I don't claim to know exactly what the objectives were, why it was done, but it's pretty clear that Mr. Mellon and To the Stars Academy were able to use some contacts and some very pro UFO friendly writers like Leslie Kane and George Knapp and people like that, and get a message to take hold, and very much did effectively get it in the mainstream and get a lot of eyes on it. And to a lot of people, that's good enough. I mean, there is a whole demographic of people interested in UFOs that seems to be a end rather than a means to an end, that they just would like people talking about it and seeing it on the news.
Well, especially, I guess, someone like Mellon, who I think worked with the Clinton and Bush administrations.
Right. And he also has experience as a professional lobbyist. And it's difficult to say, you know, we really just can't identify intent. It becomes real difficult, though, for me to think that it's entirely sincere. And it's always challenging to think, like going back to Dr. Jacobs that I was talking about, it's challenging to think that people are as credulous as they may lead you to believe they are, and that they sincerely believe these stories the way they are leading you to believe they do. And it's difficult to think that Mr. Mellon is entirely sincere when he does things like issue a statement that no one is saying aliens and we should settle down with that. And then he will then literally get on Twitter and promote the ET hypothesis. He literally say aliens after he says no one's saying it's aliens. So it's difficult to take him entirely as sincere and committed to professional standards of evidence. I mean, TTSA made a lot of claims early on, and while they were trying to gain their initial momentum and get investors, and I mean, there was even talk about, you know, building starships and what.
I was going to say, from the Vice report that I read about them when they were just getting started, I think they kind of maybe wanted to get into military contracting, and then they also had an entertainment division. I think a lot of that has folded now. I don't know what the status is on To the Stars, but it seems like they had a lot of different, I guess they called them divisions, that they were going to have doing different kind of work.
Yes, they did. And it was a bit ambiguous about exactly what we could expect and when. And you are correct that it has at least as it was, it has folded. Mr. Mellon and Luis Elizondo are no longer with To the Stars. And interestingly, really stepped up their media appearances and were much more outspoken, it seems, after they left, really dropped another gear, which is kind of interesting. And TTSA did, before Mellon and Elizondo left, they did secure an Army contract, and there was a lot of controversy over if it would involve the study of supposed UFO debris and exotic materials. And this even involved where in their reports for the SEC, they said that Linda Moulton Howe was given, I think, like $35,000 for some debris that's known around the community as Arts Parts that has a really dubious history and chain of possession that is a reference to Art Bell from the old Coast to Coast network. And he got the material from a listener, and it had a fabled story about being from a UFO crash. And that has evidently just kind of fallen by the wayside. So there hasn't been anything publicly said about what came of any money that TTSA got from that contract, or what came with any testing, or what happened. And just, I think it's safe to say that when they started 4 years ago, they certainly were not suggesting to us that in 2021, 4 years later, we should be celebrating that Luis Elizondo is now saying we're at the beginning of the beginning. That certainly was not the message that they were communicating in 2017. And there were a lot of inferences. Like I say, they were going to build a starship, and certainly the general storyline was, we're going to give you proof of extraterrestrial presence of some kind.
UFO disclosure, I think. For people that are unfamiliar, this is all part of that sort of UFO disclosure, I guess, activism that has really been, you know, I think it started to gain a little bit of steam in the 2000s and has been coming back in various iterations since.
Oh, yeah. It goes all the way back to the days of Donald Kehoe and NICAP in the 1950s, that there have been key government personnel, former military personnel, intelligence officers of prestigious standing telling the newspaper and the media and the American people that UFOs are an issue that should be dealt with. And it's resurfaced in some incarnation or another ever since. And you're correct that this latest round was revived in recent years by DeLong and Christopher Mellon and Luis Elizondo. And as we've said, they very effectively got the mainstream media talking about it and looking at it, and not really having anything of substance there, just a lot of rhetoric. And as some people say, you know, some videos of fuzzy objects, pretty much the same as we've always had.
If I could, because I think some of my listeners may be unfamiliar with some of the names we've mentioned, just because I don't always do shows on UFOs. I've done a few, but you mentioned David Jacobs, and a large part of your book, The Grays Have Been Framed, deals with David Jacobs. And I think people should know that I believe he's a retired associate professor of history at Temple University, and very involved with the alien abduction subject and, you know, the hypnotherapy stuff, I guess. And he sort of pushed, I think in the 90s, this theory that there were alien-human hybrids and an alien conspiracy. And also, he may not have had the best practices with some of these people who believe they were abducted. And I think, you know, outsiders to the UFO topic may think, oh, UFOs, I think that's kind of like kooky and weird, and I don't want to talk about that. But there is like a real exploitation that happens to people in this culture by people like David Jacobs at times.
Yes, there certainly is. And since you've read my book, you are aware it went rather lengthily into the case of Emma Woods, who just had a horrendous experience interacting with David Jacobs about her case and her experiences. And this involved hypnosis by long distance telephone. And it's hard to even, you know, like, how much time do we want to spend on it?
I want to talk about this. I think it's important. I've covered all this, this type of, like, it's beyond grifting. And I think it's just a content warning for people. It is like gross and sexual and just go on though.
All right. Thank you. Yes. Emma Woods provided recordings of these hypnosis sessions that I've posted a number of times, and some of the people that worked on it with me did as well. And David Jacobs and Emma were both aware these were being recorded, and there are a lot of sexual references in it. At one point, he suggests to her that he could send her a chastity belt to wear that he could buy for her and send. And this is under hypnosis, this discussion taking place, and that he's ostensibly suggesting that this could avert sexual abuse from these human hybrids that are allegedly descending upon her residence and molesting her. In another recording, he suggested that she mail him her panties, and that if that's not disturbing enough, it's supposed to be evidence of this hybrid molestation. But in that same recording, he suggests to her to not remember doing it, and that he would like her to mail them and box them up and then don't think about it. And just, in fact, his wording is greatly appreciated. Don't think about it at all. And in another, it just gets rather profoundly disturbing. He reportedly, and I have very good reason to believe, wanted to do emails in codes with this entourage of researchers and people who thought that they were interacting with aliens. And he used different names for himself, like Aloha Norton. And he claimed that he did this because when the hybrids read the minds of the abductees, he didn't want them to know that David Jacobs was onto their plot, was his reasoning with the abductees. And this went on to involve suggesting that Emma Woods had multiple personality disorder, and he discussed this with her during hypnosis, ostensibly to make the hybrids think that he was a researcher of multiple personality disorder and not alien abduction. And it just gets extremely bizarre, extremely.
The reason I wanted to mention all that is because there's overlap between some of what you're talking about and some of what I've seen with, I guess people would call it the Satanic Panic, but you have, there are therapists, some of them still licensed, that would, you know, psychically drive their patients to believe they were, abducted by like the New World Order Illuminati and all these crazy sort of things, you know, devil worshippers and whatnot. And, you know, we have similar testimony of some of those therapists being very abusive to their clientele and, you know, psychically driving them and, you know, issues like false memory syndrome. And I think these issues should be concerning to us, especially in an age of something like, I don't know, QAnon, because things have gotten really wild. And I think all of us know someone that could be, you know, taken in by some of the most credulous hucksters out there and at time abusers.
Oh, yes. And thanks for bringing that up. I really appreciate that. And the Satanic Panic, it very much has some of the same dynamics. And I've become involved with some activists and researchers in that field because of my interest in alleged alien abduction. And there was a Castlewood Treatment Center in Missouri that had a terrible chain of events where Dr. Schwartz was finding that through the use of hypnosis with his patients, that residential patients that supposedly had eating disorders, he's finding that they're all victims of ritual satanic abuse and supposed sexual molestation and these kinds of things. And one of the really similar dynamics to the UFO thing is that a certain doctor or researcher or therapist or hypnosis advocate will somehow coincidentally stumble upon all of these cases, and it doesn't seem obvious that the common denominator is the hypnotist. And, you know, that's certainly one of the things that it shares with the UFO scene is, Dr. Jacobs found lots of people that were being sexually abused by alien hybrids, where Schwartz at Castlewood found a lot of people that all needed to be rescued from the satanic cult that seemed to have taken hold there in Missouri. And yeah, one of the things that I hit a brick wall with Dr. Jacobs about was he had this one person he worked with that he called Elizabeth, and she was supposedly having these hybrids come to her home and use their mind control to render her unable to resist on an almost nightly basis. And astoundingly, the way this story went was they would take her electronic devices and text people that she knew, like Dr. Jacobs and some of the other people in the entourage, as I called it, and supposedly be communicating with them. And I talked to Dr. Jacobs about this, and didn't it seem like the most likely explanation might be that it was Elizabeth doing these texts? And he resisted that adamantly. And I asked him about, was any investigation made, like any kind of forensic investigation, or why wouldn't law enforcement be called? If you sincerely believe people that look like human beings claiming to be hybrid aliens are coming to this woman's house and molesting her on a regular basis, why has the police not been notified, and he didn't have an answer for that, and he had a really...
I just want to say, it's important to note, Jacobs, I think, his number of patients is not insignificant. I've read that it was in the hundreds.
It is not.
Yeah.
That's correct. And he, like his, arguably his mentor, Bud Hopkins, never got any kind of training or certification other than with UFO people and as amateur hypnotists. And I always felt pretty strongly that one of the reasons for that was there was much less recourse if it's just two consenting adults talking on the telephone or meeting in a office somewhere, as compared to, like we were saying, Mark Schwartz at Castlewood Treatment Center.
I just wanted to add to that. I mean, when it comes to this issue, I think people will hear some of what we've talked about and just say, it's so outlandish. How could people be fooled by these guys like David Jacobs? And I was just curious, I mean, how would you respond to that? Because, I mean, I think it's actually kind of gross to say, oh, these people that were taken advantage of, how could you be taken advantage of by someone who believed this outlandish thing? And I think to myself, you know, do we say that about, you know, people who got abused by, you know, the Nexium cult or any of these number of cults in that we've heard about in the past few decades that have abused people? I don't think that we should, you know, say, oh, people deserved it because they were credulous with who they believed.
I think that's a really good question, and I got to tell you, I'm really pleasantly surprised about the direction our discussion has gone to. There is a faction of the UFO community, and it's not a small part, that accept as common knowledge that there's an alien presence, that aliens are among us, that they're flying in our skies, that there are parts of the military community that are actively covering it up, that there are parts of the military community that are actively kidnapping the people that are being kidnapped by aliens to study what the aliens are doing.
The MyLabs, right? Is that what?
That's correct. The military abductees, that's correct. And there is pretty much, if you went to a UFO convention and if there were, say, 200 people there, you'd have a real good chance, I would estimate, that 150 or more of them would be up for casual discussion about extraordinary events and that take them for granted is true. And the further you get involved with this kind of thinking, the more susceptible one becomes to, if you are introduced to someone who can help you with some of these memories you would like to know more about. And the further you like they even run quote unquote support groups that these men like Jacobs and Hopkins that had no formal training in mental health counseling were facilitating these types of groups and supposed recovery from traumatic interactions with aliens. And the more this becomes taken for granted is true, and that very much like the Satanic Panic and the other cults that you've mentioned, part of the baked-in process is they're the only people you have to talk about it with because your neighbors and coworkers and family members will shun you and think there's something wrong with you, and they don't know that you're getting raped every night by an alien.
And I wanted to add something to that, and I've always thought about it because I remember I saw the one episode of South Park. It was one of the early episodes where they made fun of Whitley Strieber, probably the most famous of the you know, alien abductees in the past few decades. And I kind of felt bad because I thought, you know, and I don't know much about Whitley's actual case, other than seeing the movie with Christopher Walken playing him. But the thing was, I thought to myself, you know, even if he wasn't abducted by aliens, like, let's assume he actually believes that that was his experience. I mean, it must feel real to him in his mind, and that must be very traumatic. So I can only imagine, you know, what it would be like having, you know, hypnotherapists almost implanting memories into you, or, you know, psychically driving you to think that you were abducted by aliens, because it becomes a very real thing, at least inside your head. And, you know, it's still traumatic in that way.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, I don't speak for Emma Woods, or Leah Haley was another one that I explored pretty thoroughly, her case in my book. I don't speak for them, but I feel confident in saying that they would agree with my statement that once you've been through a lot of hypnosis sessions, you really can't get back to square one then. That's lost. Like, you can never go back to not, like, you can't just say, okay, now that I understand hypnosis better, I'm going to just surgically remove all of that stuff that we explored. And I think I was led into that, and I told him I wasn't sure about it, but he kept saying, well, maybe this happened and maybe that happened. It's there. You can't go back then to trying to explore the experience in your head and what might have really happened. So you're correct that it's there. Apparently already was trauma, whatever that may be related to. Then it gets compounded with getting involved with what by any definition we could call extremist beliefs and very dubious, unreliable memory enhancing techniques. And like any cult, that would be the answer to how do people get involved to that extent. They become increasingly dependent on the people that are supposedly helping with this narrative.
And I think I could see why people would actually, you know, be taken in by maybe a David Jacobs or a Bud Hopkins. And I don't know as much about Hopkins or the criticisms of him, but I do know he was pretty distinguished, I think, abstract expressionist artist. So very, very cultured, probably. And of course, Jacobs was very educated. Worked at Temple University. So these are like very educated, you know, cultured, you know, charming people. And I think people can get taken in by that and then be exploited at times.
Yes. And Bud Hopkins was very charismatic and likable. People wanted to believe him. He presented himself well often. And then the more prestige they get among the circuit, among this demographic that is at these UFO conferences, like I was talking about, the more there can even be somewhat of a competition to be one of the people selected for the book material or the investigation. And it can act as a validation for the person that, wow, this must be real. If John Mack says he'll work with me, then I have my confirmation. And
for people that don't know, I think John Mack, there was just a big book released about him. He was, I think he worked at Harvard, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
I think the new book is called The Believer, too, for people that wanted to know who he was. Yeah.
Yeah, he brought a lot of credibility to the whole topic of hypnosis and recovered memories and traumatic experiences that in his opinion, were related to interactions with some kind of non-human intelligence. And again, when we can go back to the researcher becomes the common denominator of Dr. Mack's people seem to be interacting with beings of love and light that were helping them spiritually evolve, where Hopkins and Jacobs were much more in the camp of something terribly evil is happening here, and there's we're being infiltrated, and humanity itself is at risk.
Now, I mean, there's a million things we could go over that have happened since the abduction phenomena really took off. I mean, there's been all these incidents. I think the last one I remember before I, you know, completely just stopped paying attention because I was like, oh, it's just another ridiculous incident. And I found some of this both entertaining and kind of saddening, but there was a thing called the Roswell slides, which was, I think, really actually just a picture of a mummified child, and they were passing it off as an alien body from the Roswell crash. And, you know, I think, like I said, outsiders look at this and say, oh, this is all just, you know, grifting and, you know, what a bunch of suckers, you know, getting P.T. Barnum'd. But why should people that maybe laugh this stuff off and say, oh, what a bunch of suckers, why should they pay attention? Because I think we're seeing a lot more grifting in our culture, and I think it's a bad thing.
I think your reference to QAnon earlier was salient, and I don't think that it's entirely coincidental either that some UFO propaganda got mixed in the QAnon mix, and that some of their websites and promoters that were big Q people are they're embracing pretty heavily this government is hiding UFOs ongoing theme. I think one of the things that's interesting, like, yes, the Roswell slides were a literal workshop in standards of evidence, if we're going to stick with that catchphrase, and people trying to use smoke and mirrors to reason their way into proof of something rather than identifying how facts are established and actually respecting professional standards of evidence. But if we're going to look at that kind of thing, one of the aspects that interest me of why care is when these former intelligence officials are involved, it's intriguing to me. I mentioned NICAP earlier, and that was one of my interests in NICAP, and I ended up doing a deep dive on them that I'll be producing some material soon, is why do CIA officers decide to sit on the board of directors of a UFO organization? Is that coincidental? Is there something more to it? Are they sincerely credulous and really think that there's interplanetary craft flying around? I think it's intriguing when former intelligence personnel decide to assist a UFO organization or get involved in UFO research. And I wonder if they're just credulous and really believe interplanetary craft are flying around, or that there's some kind of non-human intelligence among us. I find it more interesting when it's former Pentagon officials than when it's just, you know, a garden variety researcher that just seems to be trying to get some media appearances with outlandish claims.
For people that aren't in the know, do we have any good examples of, you know, maybe intelligence theatrics and the UFO community crossing over?
Oh, I would recommend a recent book by Adam Gorightly. It's entertainingly enough called Saucer Spooks and Kooks. And it covers some interesting aspects of the overlapping of the intelligence community and the UFO community. Mark Pilkington's Mirage Men is certainly at the head of the class as well.
And I mean, this all, I think you were going to say Greg Bishop's Project Beta, but
I
didn't mean to interrupt, but I mean, the case that all those books and the documentary Mirage Men covers is, you know, I mean, it was a case of a guy basically being driven insane by, I think, a member of a Fosse, which, you know, I mean, it's a really sad and tragic case, but, you know, just the intelligence angle to it was really kind of creepy reading about it.
Yeah, it is. It is creepy. And there are other instances as well where, you know, Colonel John Alexander, General Bert Stubblebine, they were very active in remote viewing and the UFO angle. And
the men who stare at goats.
That's correct. And did they really believe it? You know, it's always intriguing that along with these things, we have people like Colonel Alexander, who was an expert in non-lethal weaponry. So, you know, if you're weighing likelihoods, it can seem like it's a lot more likely that circumstances like Skinwalker Ranch that have a fabled mysterious history may have had something to do with weapons research and development more so than a sincere belief that there were dogmen jumping through portals and various things that were claimed to be witnessed there. But,
Well, hold on. Let's dig into that just one second, because Skinwalker Ranch and a lot of other things within the sort of UFO subculture has gotten funding from a private individual with a good deal of money by the name of Robert Bigelow of Bigelow Aerospace, which I think was that where you were going with maybe the weapons angle.
Right, and that Colonel Alexander acted as a spokesperson for Mr. Bigelow at various times and pertaining to Skinwalker Ranch. And then, of course, it's Mr. Bigelow that ends up implicated in this latest round as well with the Pentagon UFO project. He's right in the middle of that and getting funding, and it can be difficult to discern what's going on in all of these different scenarios. Yes.
What do you mean by getting funding?
Robert Bigelow was granted a contract in the Advanced Aerospace Weapons System application project, I believe it was, and we call it around the community the AWSAP, AAWSAP, and it seems to have been closely affiliated with ATIP, which is Luis Elizondo's claim to have been researching UFOs. And
ATIP stands for Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, but go on.
Correct. And at the time that Mr. Bigelow would have been getting these funds for the OSAP program would have been about the same time that his organization, BAS, Bigelow Advanced Aerospace, went into an agreement with the Mutual UFO Network had funded some projects for MUFON that ended in didn't go well and had a poor ending to those. So many people feel like that by proxy it was actually kind of Defense Intelligence Agency money that was funding MUFON activities, and James Carrion actually wrote some about that as well, the former director of MUFON, that there was only one board member that Bigelow informed where the money was coming from, and they did not inform the rest of the board. And so we can get further and further into the weeds here, but yeah, these people have ties and contracts to intelligence agencies that keep showing up in supposed UFO research as well.
Well, it's so interesting, and I don't know if it was you or someone else on Twitter that said this, but you know, the way Bigelow gets brought up, or you know, Hal Elizondo, right? I even think maybe comments made by Bigelow himself, but I can't say that for sure. It's almost like, you know, if you were to believe the picture that we're given, you know, Bigelow may know more about UFOs than the government does, because the government doesn't seem to know much.
Yeah, and my argument is, whether he knows anything or not, he claims to. So I really have a problem with this disclosure, UFO disclosure activism community that goes so hard after Uncle Sam, who repeatedly claims he hasn't got anything, while leaving people like Bigelow and Elizondo and Bob Lazar and George Knapp out of it, as if there's something noble about them not talking about what they claim to know.
Is Bob Lazar still around? I heard the last time I heard about him was he got in trouble for selling polonium-210. And for people who don't know, he was Mr. Area 51 back in the 90s. He said he worked there.
He is still around. The guy that said he didn't want any attention is still very much getting attention, and was the subject of a film in recent years. And yeah, he still occasionally gets some promotion from George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell. Yes, he does.
So what's interesting to me is, I guess I didn't realize this before, but I guess a lot of people in the UFO world, as you pointed out, say that they're like really interested in this because it's a defense issue and they're concerned about defense issues. And I have to be honest with you, I'm a little bit, I will admit my political bias, I'm a little bit more dovish, or at least, you know, I believe in a more restrained foreign policy, but that's all beside the point. I kind of, though, I don't know. I just find the idea that UFOs are, you know, a threat to be, you know, kind of off-putting, because it seems like throughout all the decades, they really haven't done much harm as far as we can tell.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I have a few thoughts on that. And one is that it's very much just a talking point to try to obstruct the fact that a person's just interested in UFOs and wants to talk about UFOs, and so they'll say that other people should be interested in it as a defense issue. Another point is, I don't really see how the Navy or the Air Force or the Pentagon is supposed to differentiate between a supposed UFO and just monitoring airspace like they've been doing since there's been a military. I don't know what you would do differently with a UAP task force than your regular defense personnel that are monitoring airspace and trying to identify air traffic. And as Mick West says, sometimes you just have stuff in the low information zone that you don't know what it is, and may never know what it was. That doesn't necessarily mean it's extraordinary, but the point I'm getting at is, to the UFO enthusiast, they see things through that lens, and they like go, oh wow, look, here's a UFO report. It's a triangle, and it looks cool, and it's flying around. And I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty convinced that the defense community would not see that as a UFO, that they would have or they just wouldn't have the same context as people that attend those UFO conferences. And it seems like there's a lot of semantics at play here, and like just the NORAD has always been interested in what's flying around in the air and always will be. And I'm not sure that we're really gaining any ground or can measure or quantify how do you decide one of these reports is a UFO or not, as compared to just any other blip on the radar screen that you need to figure out what it is.
I guess one of my big concerns is, you know, for the people saying, oh, we really need to treat this like it's a defense issue. I mean, if unidentified aerial phenomena haven't proven to be a threat, I kind of actually worry about, you know, and this is going to sound, you know, like the angry old man, you know, raising his fist, but I don't want my tax dollars going to something that, you know, isn't actually going to help national security.
Oh, I think that's a very legitimate concern that government transparency is an issue here, and not just about the alleged hiding of craft in the sky, but what's being done with tax dollars? Like, how did Robert Bigelow get this $22 million and what was done with it? I think those are extremely legitimate concerns. And especially now that it looks like partial, at least some of the motivation for this advertising campaign, let's just say, there may be more funding available to certain groups. So that could certainly be at play again. And that I think that's a completely legitimate concern is there's enough port projects now without funding hand tracing UFOs around, you know?
So this UFO subculture, I've always seen it as not necessarily being apolitical, but also back when I followed it a little bit more, just out of curiosity and being interested sociologically in it, I think you would find people like, say, a Leslie Keene, who I would say, you know, was sort of a progressive journalist before she got into UFOs. And then I think you would find sort of crossover with some really fringe, maybe far to the right of the political spectrum elements as well in the UFO community, but has it become more politicized in recent years?
I think it has. I do. And it's long been fascinating to me that you can have far right people that have very conservative political leanings, and I mean full-on border wall building political views, that somehow don't see that as applicable to the Space Brothers. And I'm really not sure how that works out, how much they may have been exploited by journalists that their primary motive was to indoctrinate people into far right belief systems that use the UFO topic to as a doorbuster, you know, to get them in the door and get talking to them and start mixing in the more extreme ideologies. I think that's at play sometimes.
I mean, we have clear examples of that, too. In case people don't think that happens, I mean, there was a Canadian Holocaust denier, actually, Ernest Zundel, who would publish UFO books in order to get people interested in his, you know, weird Holocaust denial stuff. So just as one example of what you're saying there.
Yeah. There are, and... So I'm not really sure how that works out, but it is, even in with media becoming more of a left-right thing as well.
I think Marco Rubio brought it up recently. I know Tucker Carlson has been covering it. So
that's correct. In just the last couple, 3 weeks, the left media has been less questioning and has just kind of repeated and parroted some of the other stories that are going around. But yeah, it does seem to be something that Senator Rubio is willing to stomp on the gas if he sees it headed somewhere beneficial. There are some more liberal politicians that are at least playing it safe and saying we need to know what this is, but we kind of get back then to questioning the motives of people like Mr. Mellon when they seem to so incorrectly paraphrase the report itself. And you know, the report even explicitly states that the vast majority of the reports that it took a look at do not fall into a category of something that's even necessarily unexplained. Yet, that's certainly not the message that Christopher Mellon is portraying in the media and on Twitter. And that kind of thing might make us really question what some of these people's end game actually is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't really think the subject of aliens comes up in the report. If anything, the people who, you know, there's always been theories that, oh, these are man-made secret craft. In some ways, this should have been a bigger report to those type of people, because I think the report brings up foreign adversarial aircraft as being a possibility, but I don't think the extraterrestrial thing comes up, really.
No, it doesn't at all. At best, there's a category for other that I pulled it up here. Let's take a look here at that, because I did think that was a relevant line. Although most of the UAP described in our data set probably remain unidentified due to limited data or challenges to the collection process or analysis, we may require additional scientific knowledge to successfully collect on, analyze, and characterize some of them. So I thought that was in the other category, that they're full on saying most of the circumstances described are probably just identified only due to limited data. Yet, yes, there's some newscasts and media and certainly people on Twitter that seem to have a vested interest in the mystery itself that are treating that other category as extremely significant.
I was going to say, too, I mean, it's not like there hasn't been government officials in the past that weren't interested in the phenomena. I mean, I think, John Podesta's interest in this was very well known during the days of the Clinton administration. I know Jimmy Carter apparently had sightings, Dennis Kucinich, Harry Reid, which I guess ties into this whole Luis Elizondo thing. But I was wondering if you could comment on, we've had so many elected officials at least even just bring up the UFO thing in passing. Why do people, you think, cling to this idea that the government is hiding something they don't want you to know, what if they really don't know what this phenomena is?
Well, I think that's a great question. And at least part of it is because pushing against a rail that you are confident will not give is a good business strategy. That's at least part of it, that they have no intention of, in some instances, of winning an argument with Uncle Sam. So it's safe to use that as a business strategy for donations and support and the selling of goods and services, because it's proven to be perpetual and ongoing. Where, like we were saying earlier, if you direct those demands at Robert Bigelow, one way or the other, you're going to hit a brick wall pretty quick, where Uncle Sam and the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense have the potential to be long, ongoing years worth of back and forth and hearings and that kind of thing. So I think that's part of it. I also think that there's a certain amount of credulous people that just that's what they would view as confirmation of their beliefs. And that would be the verification that would make them feel like it validated something that happened to them in the past. And as I've kept bringing up standards of evidence, that's not even necessarily the case. Like, because of the beat you cover, I'm sure you're aware that the mind control demographic, they had their disclosure in the 1970s. It did get outed that there were or mind control programs. And of course, that doesn't mean that everyone that has a claim about it is vindicated.
I was going to say, too, I mean, I could almost understand the UFO cover-up sort of theory if we believe the really dark sort of, I think, 1970s and 1980s lore about UFOs. You know, the dull space sort of John Lear, aliens and humans, the government is working with the aliens at underground bases and it's part of the New World Order conspiracy. But it seems like a lot of disclosure people think that the aliens are like good, they're our space brothers, or at least I've heard that from some people that follow the Stephen Greers and Alfred Webbers. So what exactly would the government be covering up if these aliens are our friends? I've never understood that.
That's certainly one of the demographics, yes. There are certainly people that, as I was saying earlier, would casually tell you about the interactions they've had with aliens that are peaceful and loving and consider them friends and mentors. There's no doubt about it. One of the ways that conspiracy goes is that Uncle Sam wants to control power and control the narrative, and he sees keeping the reality of aliens quiet as a way to do that. And I think Dr. Greer's big spiel is that it would mean free energy, and that would cause Uncle Sam to lose his stranglehold on several industries and wouldn't want to let the loving space brothers share free energy with us, which I got to say.
But then why wouldn't the space brothers go on? I'm sorry.
It's all right. I thought that was a rather clever spiel as they go, you know.
I mean, but I guess it's clever, but it leaves me wondering, like, well, why aren't the space brothers, or I don't know, I was reading a story about I think he was an Israeli government official that was calling it the Galactic Brotherhood. I'm like, well, why doesn't the Galactic Brotherhood just, you know, stop the cover-up? They're our space brother friends. Like,
Yeah, now that's not really well addressed, is why don't they just, like, why do they have to go through the White House to get to the people? And I guess some people would be arguing they're not, that we do see them all the time. But I'm more in the camp of the argument you're making, that I'd need a little more validation of that than a bunch of people telling me that they see them all the time.
Are there people that still adhere to that sort of, like I said, there's a really dark version of the UFO mythology, that, you know, the John Lear type thing. Do people, are there still like a contingent of people that are into that?
I think there are, but I think also where this leads us is we have a new UFO community, as I think every type of community post-pandemic. Like, if we had been having this discussion 2 years ago, I would have been thinking about people I see at regional and statewide and national gatherings. And now it's much more social media. Twitter is kind of the going UFO community in a lot of ways. There's some Zoom events occasionally, that kind of thing. So we're having a whole regrouping of what the UFO genre is. And I think it's yet to be seen what's going to emerge from it and take the lead. Will we even go back to ever having live conferences? I think a lot of it's yet to be seen what's going to be popular and what's going to be, quote, successful, unquote.
What's the makeup of the conferences like? Because I feel like people, so I'm into, like, say, pro wrestling. I think people hear, oh, you're into pro wrestling. You know, what's a pro wrestling show like? Is it all like, you know, angry rednecks? And I'm like, no, it's, a lot of it is just like, you know, suburban kids, and, you know, they have enough money to buy replica belts. And I think sometimes people have this same conception of, I think it's a mean-spirited conception, like, that people that are into UFOs or paranormal shows are like, I don't want to put it in too mean of a way, but I think people sometimes think, oh, uneducated or like hillbilly, and I'm not sure that's the case either.
I understand what you're saying. I do tend to think, even across educational lines, I think there is a socioeconomic thing happening here, where there needs to be, with many people, now it's not absolute, but I think there is a certain amount of time and disposable income and quality of life to have the attention to worry about, you know, UFOs and some 1972 case or what happened to Whitley Strieber and things like that.
I assume to go to these conventions, I assume it's, you know, even the trip alone is probably not, you know, it can cost a lot.
Yeah, like, right, like, we could kind of stay with the wrestling or a sports analogy that, yeah, it's something that requires planning, and one has to value to a certain extent to, you know, have a college football weekend or something like that. You certainly do. And you're right. These, at least before the pandemic, the conferences were often multi-day. It would require a person taking off of work, probably one day, like a Friday at least. There might be some travel. There's going to be some hotel. And while packages were available, it certainly required being compatible with a lifestyle that one could afford it to a certain extent, both financially and with the time.
So the last thing I wanted to touch upon, and I just asked that socioeconomic thing because I think it's something that, you know, is worth thinking about. I think a lot of people have, you know, the time to sort of invest, the time and resources to invest in these things. And, you know, I don't think it's shocking that you'll find someone like Luis Elizondo, who was in, you know, U.S. Army counterintelligence. And we didn't really get into who he was. And I guess there's some controversies about who exactly he was. I'm on the Wikipedia page right now, and it says Elizondo is mostly known as the director of the now defunct Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. But apparently there's a little bit more of a murky area on his involvement with AATIP.
Yes, there is a lot of controversy there. He certainly seems to have been a counterintelligence officer and an employee in the Department of Defense. It is much less clear, as covered by journalists like Keith Clore and Sarah Scholes, it's much less clear what role, if any, he had as claimed in these UFO programs, or how recreational or official they may have been. Just today, I did a blog post at the UFO Trail, my blog, where the Defense Intelligence Agency gave me a final response for a FOIA request I had submitted a couple years ago for correspondence, emails, or memos between Mr. Elizondo and the DIA pertaining to the AATIP. And they informed me Monday that a search revealed none. I mean, you know, which I'm not sure what to even say about that. There's been some reports that the DOD deleted all of Elizondo's emails.
Well, I think he's been going around saying that there's a government attempt to destroy his reputation.
That's correct. He has filed. He had a UFO lawyer, at least famous for his UFO cases and work, Daniel Sheehan, file a complaint with the DOD Inspector General. That's correct. And we're yet to see how that shakes out. But Elizondo claims that a disinformation campaign is being conducted against him. My personal view on it is it's certainly reasonable to reserve judgment. And, you know, we're going to keep coming back to the standards of evidence. And when evidence is made available for public review that proves something one way or the other, then we'll know.
So it's kind of interesting to me. Have there been other people in the UFO subculture that have been maybe skeptical of Elizondo? And I'm not saying, I don't know that you're passing judgment on Elizondo either, but I guess, has anyone bothered questioning him? I think John Greenwald of the Black Vault did at one point, although I think they're more friendly now. But are there other examples of people that may be, you know, withholding judgment or even being more skeptical of him in some cases?
There are, and there is certainly a segment of UFO Twitter, as it's known, and as we alluded to earlier, which for all practical purposes right now pretty much is the UFO community until it evolves into something else. There is a segment of it that is skeptical, that doesn't understand how a person would come into a genre like UFOs that has a well-documented history of charlatans and false claims and hoaxes, and make an assertion that they ran a UFO program at the Pentagon unprepared to validate that.
And he's making some Elizondo has made some pretty big claims about UFOs, right? I mean,
he certainly has. And then he invokes a non-disclosure agreement when asked to substantiate them. That's correct. And what you might could even figure a way that, okay, so chain of events happened. They thought DeLong would be the spokesperson, but maybe DeLong kept making really ill-advised comments on podcasts. So then maybe somebody says, okay, Elizondo, take the reins. He jumps out here. Maybe he never intended to claim whatever, but he does claim he ran this program and that he knows about UFO debris and all this kind of stuff. And the thing that really calls that into question for me is, rather than when people ask for some kind of verification, rather than acknowledging, I'm not prepared to verify it, and I'm sorry about that. There's reasons I can't validate it. Instead, it's often been spun into some kind of attack of the people that question it, as if my very FOIA request to the DIA should be viewed as some kind of personal attack rather than just part of the fact finding process. And so that's one of the things that has concerned me the most about the claims that aren't substantiated, is that if I were in that position, I would be completely willing to acknowledge it's an unsubstantiated claim and explain more why I had made it, or why I was unprepared to substantiate it.
What's the biggest claim? What's the biggest claim that stands out to you that you sort of are like, well, that's a, you know, that may require some extraordinary evidence that Elizondo has made?
Well, that he directed this project, ATIP, is right up there, because that seems to get walked back to various extents at times too. Like, the wording gets funny in some of the documents that he releases about being involved or being a director of special projects and things like that. But he's made some pretty serious claims too about, was asked about if the government has retrieved downed alien craft and invoked his NDA, which is, of course, indicative of something I can't talk about, where, of course, you would be allowed to simply say, none to my knowledge. I'm not aware of anything like that. And so, in a manner of saying I can't talk about it, you kind of are at least making an implication, or certainly opening the door to perpetuate the mystery.
And I was going to add, I mean, Elizondo has had a really, really high profile. I mean, he did an exclusive with 60 Minutes. It was funny, before I was recording with you, I had mentioned the UFO report to one of the sponsors of my show. And the one sponsor that I have isn't really into the UFO stuff. He's more into, like, Vietnam military history and does some stuff about stock trading and Wall Street. And he said, yeah, there's some guy that's saying hypersonic, and he seemed pretty credible, and I said, Elizondo. So this is really getting out there into the mainstream. Elizondo has sort of captured the imagination of a lot of people who were otherwise uninterested in this phenomenon.
Yes, and he is. I haven't looked at his history, his employment history, and verified it. But I would say, from watching how he handles himself, that he is experienced at interacting with people, and he's good at projecting a message and trying to influence the person to agree with them and like him. And he is good at that, and he does it well with some interviewers. And that certainly does play in to the whole snowball that we're seeing rolling here.
With Elizondo, what for you is the implication of the FOIA documents you received? And I guess if Elizondo isn't being completely honest, like potentially, and I'm not saying he isn't being honest or anything like that, but if he isn't, what would the reason for that be?
I think to that I would say that it seems that he may have encouraged some misrepresentations of circumstances with journalists like Leslie Kean and George Knapp. The purposes, it seems that he may have not really been involved in this story until well after the ATIP actually stopped being funded. And there's some researchers that have some different ideas about what would have been taking place and what was going on and why this story got built the way it did. I really couldn't say. History would tell us that there may be some kind of intelligence operation taking place that may be advantageous for various purposes about weapons research and development, to portray certain weapons, or to history would tell us that there have been some operations where intelligence officers may have taken an interest in people with an inordinate amount of concern about the types of things that Elizondo and Mellon have been talking about. I, of course, just couldn't say, but ultimately I would say the same thing I've been telling my friends about my research with NICAP. They were professional intelligence officers, so they're pretty good at what they do, and it's really hard to identify why they're doing it.
And just for clarification, in case I have anyone listening that's been living under a rock, what has the government's reaction been to Elizondo? Because I'm assuming he had reasons for being, you know, pretty upset with the government and saying, oh, they're smearing me.
Yes, the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, initially released a statement saying that he was involved, if not directing, I'd have to go back and look, the ATIP, and Senator Reid substantiates his claim as well in a letter that Senator Reid was influential in seeing that the project got funded. However, since that point in time of the initial Pentagon statements, they have taken another tactic and denied that he was ever assigned any responsibilities in the ATIP. None. Not just directed it, but that he had no assigned responsibilities. Neither he nor the DOD has clarified who did operate the program or how extensive it was, or, you know, some people have kind of thought, well, what are we talking about here? Some guy that, you know, had a portfolio of pictures, or are we talking about, half a dozen, 10, 12 personnel that actually investigated cases and had a significant budget. And these things seem yet to be ironed out and seen, and there's just a lot of ambiguity. And that in itself makes me skeptical, or at least reserving judgment and awaiting more verification on Elizondo's claims, is that he is very ambiguous about the whole situation as well. But to answer your question, the DOD, at this point in time, their spokespersons are just reiterating repeatedly that Elizondo had no assigned responsibilities in the ATIP while he worked in the Undersecretary of Defense office.
So in terms of the conversation we've had for the past hour and a half now, and I appreciate your staying long, what do you hope my listeners get out of this? Because I have a little bit of a different audience than maybe some of the other shows you've been on, like Ben All of America. Tim's been on my show too, and you know, very much love Tim Ben All. But for my listeners that may not be as up on the UFO and the paranormal sort of circuits and the subcultures there, what do you want them to get out of this conversation? Because I think for me, I just kind of hate seeing people get taken for a ride, and I think a lot more people maybe potentially getting taken for a ride now when it comes to this whole idea of UFO disclosure than ever before, because, you know, it seems like every decade there's a new iteration of this. Oh, disclosure is going to happen. This is just the beginning, not the end. And I hate seeing people get taken advantage of that way.
I very much agree with that. And it's why I started my blog in 2010. I had been talking to people like David Jacobs and going over the Bud Hopkins material and interacting with the researchers. And I felt like I had something to contribute and began writing the blog. And that eventually led to the book, because I don't like seeing people taken for a ride either. And the UFO community is a virtual workshop of logical fallacies. It undermines critical thinking in and of itself oftentimes. And so what I would like to see people get out of hearing me, I appreciate them giving me their attention for this long. I'd like them to apply their critical thinking skills to the news reports they see and ask themselves if they're hearing the right questions, if they're seeing the right answers, and apply those standards of evidence to the things they hear. I think that's very important.
And I guess, what would you say, there's going to be at least one listener that says to me, why did you and this guest have to be such Debbie Downers? And, you know, they'll say the X-Files line. They'll say, I want to believe. And I get why people want to believe that, you know, there's something out there. I think life is just as interesting regardless of what's out there in the great beyond of outer space. But what would you say to the people that are, you know, almost, I feel like it's almost a religious thing in a way where, you know, they really do want to believe that, you know, we're being visited. What do you say to those people that sort of have a sort of knee-jerk reaction like that?
I would say that's why it is so important to respect standards of evidence, that it is a vast and wondrous universe. I don't think there's any question about that. There's all kinds of wondrous things yet to be discovered, but pseudoscience and logical fallacies and false claims hinder the process. They get in the way and they slow it down. So the more interested we are in the mysteries and the entertaining topics, the more important it is to respect the fact-finding process.
Well, how can my listeners keep up with your work and tell them how to read your blog, The UFO Trail?
It's a Google blog, ufotrail.blogspot.com, or just you know, do a internet search for the UFO trail. And I'm on Twitter at the UFO trail. And pretty much everything links from my blog, my Twitter, my book. And I just finished writing my second book, and I'm hoping to, as I've been joking with friends, I shall now undertake the hero's journey of book formatting, and will hopefully self-publish that in the near future. It's going to be on the overlapping of NICAP and the intelligence community. So I would love to have people take a look at my blog, and they can pretty much find my Twitter account and everything from there. Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jack Brewer. Be sure to keep up with his work at the UFO Trill blog if you found our conversation to be in any way fascinating. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@ProtonMail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Mark, Chase, Zach, Omar, Ted, Ryan, Gratz, Martin, Gary, Emilia, and Mickey. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. There is also a $1 tier and a $5 tier. Any amount will help. Your support is what keeps this show going. So if you appreciate the work I do, $1, $5, $10, $15, doesn't matter. Please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Again, that's patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.